Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The editor-in-chief for the magazine The Atlantic has written a piece where unnamed sources reveal President Donald Trump's words and attitudes about United States military service members. According to the article, the president questions why people would die for the country during a 2017 visit to France. For example, the president is said to have referred to more than 1,800 Marines who lost their lives at Belleau Wood in 1918 as suckers for getting killed. As the road to the November 3rd election continues, we check in with South Dakota State University political scientists about the landscape of the election, including what the recent revelations tell us about this year's campaign trail. Lisa Hager is an assistant professor of political science at South Dakota State University. Dr. Hager, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
David Wiltsey is an associate professor of political science at South Dakota State University. Dr. Wiltsey, thanks for being here as well.
Good morning.
There's a lot happening right now with a vaccine timeline, this article in The Atlantic, and a new book by Bob Woodward with the question of what did the president know and when about the severity of the coronavirus. And all of this ties into how we sort of pay attention to the 2020 election. So let's start with The Atlantic article and these words about America's service members. David Wiltsey, why don't you start us off with some of your impressions about the timing of the report and some of the responses that we have heard or have not heard.
I don't know what you mean by responses we've not heard.
Because there are not anonymous, anonymous sources. John Kelly, Kelly has declined to confirm or deny that, some of the things that we think that he could confirm or deny. So, yeah, go ahead.
Right. Well, one of the problems with these sources is that it is from ex-military folks, even folks like John Kelly, who took civilian positions within the administration. They still have that general demeanor and belief that they shouldn't be talking out of school, and that the sort of things that are said behind closed doors within the White House or what the president might say elsewhere shouldn't be made public. Most other appointees would have no problem with this, particularly after they leave, but we're kind of bumping into that that military frame of mind that these folks have. Now, obviously, this brings up a lot of issues of credibility of the reporting, but the fact that these folks have that military background really make them hesitant to talk on this.
What did we learn in the piece, though? Jeffrey Goldberg, he is the the editor-in-chief who wrote the piece. He was on Point recently, I think, or I heard him on NPR. I can't remember for sure what program. And you know, they were asking him about this, just like people are asking Bob Woodward, you know, why did you wait so long to tell people about what you knew the president had said on tape? And Jeffrey Goldberg said, I stand behind this 100%. I'm absolutely confident these sources know what they're talking about. What's revealed in the article itself?
The delay is usually caused by the kinds of verification that they do. They go through source after source after source to try to confirm these things from multiple individuals. And, you know, these things are very damning. These are things that we're not used to hearing from any policymaker, much less the president. And, you know, for a lot of people, this just really reveals a mentality on the part of the president that is very transactional, that he just doesn't understand the nature of public service, particularly military service, which is one of the hesitations that people had when he was first nominated, somebody who didn't come from a background that included any kind of public service, someone straight out of the private sector that's used to this kind of financial transactions and not doing anything without some kind of direct payoff to himself. So this is this is pretty shocking stuff when it comes right down to it. We just have never had a president speak in these terms before.
Dr. Lisa Hager, weigh in here on this the report, and you know, we had heard President Trump, we'd heard Donald Trump when he was a candidate talk about John McCain, and in this report, there's you know the revelation of things he said in front of General John Kelly about people who were buried at Arlington. Both of those things kind of feel like you could say they're a little political, but when you get to people buried at Bella Wood from 1918. That shows, I think, a sort of a broader tone that the president has. What did you read in the article that stands out to you?
Most of what Dave was just mentioning, that it just seems that President Trump just doesn't quite have this understanding of why someone would go into the military without there being some sort of financial payoff for them, and seeing that bigger value of serving in the military, of that greater good. Everything that he thinks about is from more of an individual perspective. And I think that's what we're seeing here. And I think politically speaking, there's obviously concerns about these sorts of comments being made. It has been seen that the president is visibly distressed about the article that was published in The Atlantic, and that he has gone on to deny these sorts of comments that he made. And I think because we don't know who these sources are, and we don't have some of these key individuals speaking out about, yes, I heard him say these things, no, I did not, then I think it makes it a little bit easier for him to explain it away, even if he would say, maybe I, you know, did in fact say some of these things, which at this point he has not admitted to them at all, but we do know he's gone on record saying things about John McCain and whatnot. Again, I think people have been fairly forgiving of some of his remarks in the past. Obviously, they have been of a different nature than with respect to military service. But because of the forgiving nature of his base and his supporters, I think just basically saying, well, clearly I don't have any sort of military background, can possibly bode well in his favor to overcome this particular scandalous sort of article.
Right. As a former United States Marine... I don't want to get personal, but I'm not a historian by any stretch, but the Battle of Bella Wood, I think it's worth noting what we're talking about here in World War One and in 1918. And when the president talks about John McCain and says, I prefer people who, you know, didn't get captured, who didn't lose, and we hear him talking about the number of deaths and saying they were kind of suckers for dying. I mean, this is a month-long battle. This is, you know, the Germans are 40 miles outside of Paris. This is one of the battles that defines the United States Marine Corps for years to come. They have a 55 to 60% fatality rate in this battle. They're getting shredded by machine gun fire and mustard gas. And this is the battle where Dan Daly, who's a gunnery sergeant at the time, says, come on, you sons of bitches, do you want to live forever? I mean, this is the first stuff that you learn when you become a Marine, is this history that is really formed largely in battles like this. And they hold that land with, they have to hold the line, and they do, and it changes the tactics of the Marine Corps. This is where the phrase devil dog comes from. When you hear Marines call devil dogs, it's because of those Marines who were literally crawling on all fours, foaming at the mouth because they were hit with mustard gas and it's hot and they're sweating and their eyes are bloodshot and they are growling and taking over machine gun nests. And the entire world knows of the Marines for that battle. It is astonishing to so many people in the Marine Corps to hear those people referred to as suckers. And I'll get off my soapbox now, but I just feel for people who don't know the history of Bella Wood. I mean, you have to know who we're talking about here. And they did win that battle. They did hold the lines against superior German forces at that point. But there was an incredible cost to that.
Yeah, it's literal hallowed ground. I mean, this is just, you know, striking to the identity of every Marine and to anyone who's served. And, you know, this is going to be a really interesting test this year in how the electorate will respond to this. You know, Trump was famous for saying, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. and my supporters will still support me. And we are almost getting to that point with these particular comments. And it's just going to be a test to see if our partisanship, and more importantly, our negative partisanship, is enough to overwhelm our indignation at these kind of comments, and if people will still reliably cast a vote for him come November.
Let's talk about some of the other things, particularly this, you know, what did the president know and when about the severity of the coronavirus? And Bob Woodward, a famed journalist from the Watergate era, Woodward and Bernstein, recently came to South Dakota to talk as part of the Beau Forum in Sioux Falls. And he has, I think, 18 recorded interviews. So we have the president on tape. These are not unnamed sources, although Bob Woodward did a lot of other investigative reporting for this new book called Rage. Lisa Hager, what are people still tuned in? You know, to David's point, does it matter at this point? Are people so ensconced in their "I love the president" or "I hate the president" that none of this is really going to impact vote? Or are we still making decisions at this point?
I think there are some who are making decisions, but I still think we have a pretty polarizing field here. So when you do see what people are saying about both candidates, they either tend to support President Trump wholeheartedly or they don't. And then the same with respect to Biden, kind of this never Trump sort of attitude. We need to support Biden or whoever the Democratic candidate would have ended up being if we go back even a few months or so to when that was still getting hashed out. And, you know, being in the middle, I'm almost wondering if at this point we really have too many people in the middle at the because of just the fact that it's so polarizing and everyone's had 4 years to kind of make their decisions about what they were thinking regarding President Trump and the Democratic Party. I think the one thing that we have that's interesting here is there's explanations behind all of these different comments, or when we were talking about Trump's views regarding military, you know, he's denying those. So there's always two sides of the story. And I think what you see a lot of times are people latching on to whichever view supports their current choice with respect to their presidential vote. So if you support Trump, you see that, you know, there aren't these key people coming out and saying anything with respect to the president's military comments. You know, same thing, like we know with Trump, he was saying, well, I was trying not to cause a panic regarding coronavirus. You know, you can see from his point of view, okay, you know, we don't quite have the smoking gun on some of these things. Or like, yeah, maybe it was a good idea at the time to not cause panic. 2020 hindsight, maybe we would think differently. You know, then you have others on the other side who are going to say, you know, what he's saying is inexcusable regarding veterans. We do have these unnamed sources. Clearly, those were vetted in order for the articles to be published. He's saying that he was trying not to cause a panic. Is that the president's job? So I think we have these different frames in which we can look at these different events, and I think people who already are supporting Biden or already supporting Trump are going to pick those different frames in which to view these stories.
Let's talk about the coronavirus then, and particularly the development of a vaccine and how it relates to November 3rd. I was watching some footage from Sturgis on the internet last night, and one of the people who spoke to the reporter said, you know, November 4th, this virus goes away. There was a belief from this person that how much of the virus itself and how it's being dealt with is tying into an election. Professor Wiltsy, let's start with you. The timing of a vaccine and promises that are made, how does that normally fit? I mean, it can't be unusual in an election year to make promises that maybe can't be fulfilled.
Well, it's normal to make promises that you know, might be difficult for an individual president or a legislator to enact right away. But what's really unusual about this is, you know, they're making a promise, or he's making a promise about a scientific process that he has absolutely no control over, that has such a varied timeline in terms of, you know, the development of a vaccine. I mean, there's all these different intervening variables that could make this go rather quickly or rather slowly, you know, such as some of the problems that AstraZeneca is having right now with some of their trials. It really is an extraordinary promise for a candidate to make when they're saying that something completely out of their control is going to be done by a particular time. And, you know, all that serves to do is really harden and intensify people's partisan lens on this particular issue, whether it be that biker who, you know, sees this as something that is generated by Democrats for a political purpose, or if you're a critic of the president, that, you know, this promise is something that is made solely for political benefit.
What happens next? What happens after elections? In your, you know, in the political science world, are we truly in unprecedented territory with this president and this with 2020, or can we expect something to happen after the election that brings us back to some kind of normal, Lisa?
Honestly, I think it's going to depend on what happens with this election, but given how polarized our environment clearly is, I'm not sure we're going to see that rally around the flag sort of effect with respect to the president, you know, where the public goes, okay, who I voted for may have lost the election, but I'm ready to back this president. I just don't necessarily see that happening because we've got really two vastly different candidates here. And it'll mostly be a repeat, most likely, of what happened in 2016. And with respect to the coronavirus, yeah, I mean, I think it's still going to be a thing in a month or so, or even later. So, you know, I think that's the other thing that's going to be difficult is, you know, you even have people saying if a vaccine came out that quickly, they would be cautious of actually going ahead and getting that. So I think we're going to see people being more hesitant, and that could impact their vote. We'll just have to kind of see. But the promise that the president's made about a vaccine, it so far looks pretty lofty.
What are we seeing from the other side? What are we seeing from the Democrats, from Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, in regards to some of these things we've talked about, whether it be the comments on veterans or whether it be what the president knew about the severity of coronavirus? And what's the opportunity for the Democrats as candidates, and are they making the most of those opportunities ahead of the election? Dr. Wiltsey?
Well, you know, in direct reference to what you just said about the vaccine, Senator Harris just the other day, you know, came out and said something along the lines of, if there were a vaccine available by November 3rd, I'm not sure I would take it right away. I would want to make sure that this was something that was beyond the word of the president in terms of its effectiveness. So, I mean, they are kind of falling into this trap of viewing this with a partisan lens. And, you know, it all speaks to the fact that we're kind of in a new normal when it comes to the support of the president. And how 20, 30 years ago, there were a lot of Americans who were willing to support the president, like Lisa said, the rally around the flag phenomenon. Shortly after a new president comes into office, people defer to that person. They give them the benefit of the doubt, and they wait to see how the president does in the first 100 days or so of office, and then they begin to kind of drift back to their normal partisan preferences. President Trump had no honeymoon period when he took office. His support amongst Democrats has always been extraordinarily low. Compare that to 20 years ago when President Bush came to office. In a very divisive election, it was only a matter of months that people began to defer to the president even before September 11th. So, you know, Trump is not the cause of this. He is just a symptom of this and the people's reaction to him. So I think we really are in a different era now when it comes to our opinions of the president and how we view the president in terms of the mass public support.
And maybe you could make the same argument about the media and the military and police, and we're in this period of time where we're looking at institutions in a whole new way, some of them very healthy and some less so. Dr. Hager, do you want to say anything before we wrap this up today about anything heading into this 2020 election, what we know right now? And I guess I'm kind of wondering, we're probably going to have more surprises, aren't we?
I'm sure that we will. I think the biggest thing that the Biden-Harris ticket is going to be focusing on with coronavirus is painting President Trump as untrustworthy in terms of coming up with a vaccine timeline without really understanding that process, like what Dave was mentioning, and the fact that if it is something that's rushed through, is that something that people really want to go ahead and get for themselves? And I think, you know, some of these other scandals relating to the military comments that the president is making also just give them more material to basically show that they're a complete different set of candidates and ideals than what we've currently had the past 4 years. So giving people that option to really make a choice.
Dr. Lisa Hager and Dr. Dave Wiltsey, both SDSU political scientists, thank you so much for being here with us today. It's always a pleasure. Lisa, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Dave, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.